Running like a red disease. Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history has a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, I hope all is well with you today. I hope you had a great day yesterday and even better day today. I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, have to do, must do, should do, and better do. And I hope that the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, you just go ahead and do it anyway. You just got to get done. Stop procrastinating. Get up. Get moving. Make it happen. Brothers and sisters, got a great program for us today. I got a good brother and friend to this program who's been on a few times. Actually, he's been on one time on this format, but he was on a couple times we were on Blog Talk Radio, and that is my good friend and brother Damani Aquil. Brother Damani Aquil. Good morning, Brother Damani. How are you?
Baba Oshi, how you doing?
I am doing fine, my brother. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Yes, sir.
Good. Well, it's an honor, it's a pleasure to have you on. I got a few things I want to go through right quick right now, but we're going to get to you and talk about all the great things that you are offering to our people and things you are involved in, and we're going to have some good discussions. And, of course, brothers and sisters, you can join this discussion. You can dial 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. This is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradio.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times that I'm going to give are Eastern times. On Wednesdays, today, this evening, well, actually on Mondays also, I got to put that in the mix, it's, although I didn't hear them broadcast this past Monday, and that is Buy Black 365. Buy Black 365 is supposed to be on Mondays at 8 p.m., and we'll look for that. On Wednesdays, it's Revive with Sister POC, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Revive. On Thursdays, tomorrow evening, it's Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People. And we're in the process of about to open the Cafe ULU, brothers and sisters. Cafe ULU on Sylvan Road and Georgia 166, Highway 166, right there. It's easy to get to. All roads lead to Cafe ULU. And that program is 9 p.m. on Thursdays with Baba Kimbizi, Baba Brother DJ, and Baba Akima. Well, this Thursday, I'll be hosting along with Sister Nanana and Brother Thurman and Baba Kimbizi. Okay. And on Fridays, if it's Friday evening and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening. Time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays, SST, Saturday Sports Talk with host Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Saturdays. Saturday early evening or late afternoon, whichever you want to say it, it's Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. On Sundays, Sunday morning, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. Also, too, I promote my good friend, Brother Bomani. I know Brother Damani. I know you know Brother Bomani with AfricaForTheAfricans.org and the trips he plans to take our brothers and sisters. Have taken many of our brothers and sisters already to Africa. And check him out. His website is AfricaForTheAfricans.org. His email address is AFTA2010@MSN.com. Email address again is AFTA2010@MSN.com. And you can reach Brother Bomani Tahimbe at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. Also, too, you can check out his Facebook page to look at some of the tour packages and some of the people he's brought and some of the things that they've done. His Facebook page is facebook.com/Bomani, B-O-M-A-N-I, /Bomani. And then if you want to look at some of the videos, go to YouTube, youtube.com/Bomani 2007, to check out some of the videos for Africans for the African. Brother Damani, how you doing, man? You been okay?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Good. How about you, Baba?
I'm doing fine. You have a program that helps our brothers and sisters learn languages so that we can communicate with our brothers and sisters and be able to communicate effectively. And I know one of the programs that started already, right? The Spanish class started the 28th?
Yes, yes. We have a Spanish class that started the 28th under the umbrella of Trans Global Connections. Here in Atlanta, and the program is part of the African Diasporic Language Series, which includes a Spanish class, a French class, and a soon-to-be-deployed Haitian Creole class that's coming in the next couple of months. That one will start as well. But, yeah, the Spanish one started on the 28th. It's going strong. You know, we are learning to be proficient in that tool as a means to connect with our brothers and sisters across the African diaspora of Latin America and the Caribbean, and brothers and sisters here, you know, as well.
Sure, sure, because I know we have a lot of Spanish-speaking brothers and sisters from the Caribbean, Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico and so forth, that we need to communicate effectively with. Because they're part of right. that African diaspora, although some of them don't want to admit to that, and some of them reject that, because that's,
right.
that's all a part of the European Caucasian extremism, racism,
that's
and
right.
privilege that has been impacted upon us as human beings, not just as African people, but that system is a global system. You know, and I don't use the word supremacy anymore. You know, I've been confronted with they're not supreme, and you're right, they're not. it's been proven many times over. What they suffer from is cognitive dissonance, that they have strongly believed and strongly held beliefs that they are superior, and that they have been endowed by their creator to pretty much run roughshod over the world, and even though you can present evidence to them that is contrary, and there's plenty of it, they'll dismiss it, they'll ignore it, because it doesn't fit with their mindset. It doesn't fit with their paradigm of how to do things and how things should be run. They believe that they are superior, and nothing that you can say or do, nothing that we can say or do can change that, and I wish we would stop. To hell with them. Let's work on ourselves. Because also, too, that cognitive dissonance works both ways. We've been fed the idea that we are inferior. And even though persons like yourself and me and many others who want to consistently tell our people that we are not, some of us dismiss it because we've been trained so well, you know. So we have a lot of work to do. There was an article I pulled from Your Black World, and I haven't read anything from Your Black World in quite some time. But I think it's appropriate. What we're discussing today, you know, in terms of the need to learn languages, and that is the fact that, and it says here, the title of the article from Your Black World is "Why many American, and I say American Africans, I don't say African Americans, I say American Africans, because Africa is the noun. A noun describes a person, place, or thing. We are a noun. We're not, you know, we're not an adjective. We're not black. We're Africans. A noun describes a person, place, or thing. And what word goes in front of the noun, the adjective, describes what kind of African we are. So we're here in America, we're American Africans. If we were in Cuba, we'd be Cuban Africans, Puerto Rican Africans, Barbadoan Africans. You know, and I go all the way down the line to Brazilian Africans, Ghanaian Africans, Nigerian Africans, British Africans, because that's what we are. We're African people. And it says, why many American Africans are relocating to Africa? Both. And I don't use the word slavery either, because we were not slaves. In fact, Brother Damani, I was watching the news this morning, and they supposedly have found a ship, one of the last ships that brought our people here.
That.
You heard about that? Yeah. And the news gave a little history on the ship itself, because the ship was made around at the time of the abolition, or the time of the so-called emancipation, around 1860. It was a Caucasian in Alabama who wanted to defy bringing Africans here. And so he built this ship and sailed it to Africa, bringing over 100 some of our people back to this land. And then they tried to destroy it. They tried to destroy the ship, but they found some remnants of it, I guess. That's what they're saying. And of course, the Caucasian who did that, he just wanted to prove that, it, you know, oh, you're going to say I can't bring no more Africans over here, you know. And but what I'm going to tell you what bothers me is that fact that we keep saying the word slave, you know. In fact, Gayle King, Oprah's friend, she's on CBS News, and that's who did the story. And she said, this is the last ship that brought slaves to America. They didn't bring slaves. They brought Africans. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We resisted, and we always resisted, and we'll always resist. We're not slaves. And so they brought these brothers and sisters. They're all based upon the story that the Caucasian was presenting. They were all pretty much teenagers. They were all young, anywhere between 12, 13, up to like 20, early 20s. All of them young, you know, and suppose this was one of the, and then one of the, then they had some of the descendants of those brothers and sisters. Some of them were in their 70s, and which I'm getting close to, which I'm getting close to. But anyway, you know, and I understand how they, you know, feel about recognizing that they are, because that's a good history to make that connection, but still, they still frame it within a context of enslavement, of captivity. I'm very happy to know this. I'm very glad to be here in America. I'm happy. You know, it's almost like the Negro dude named Richburg, I think it was, who wrote a book about how happy he was that his folks got out of Africa because of such a mess that Africa is, you
right,
know,
right.
He was happy that he was happy that Europeans enslaved us.
Right.
Took us in captivity, you know. So but here's the piece. Like I said, I don't use the word slave. So I use captive or captivity or captured or captors. So both captive and post captive periods have been one thing in common. They all observe many Africans moving into America for various reasons. But now there are those American Africans who have decided to challenge the norm by moving back home to Africa. And one of the reasons? Racism. Mohamedina El Mujeri is just one of many American Africans who left the U.S. for Africa after resigning from her job in New York as a digital marketer. As an African person in America, even when you're rich enough to live in places like New York, you're always an outsider, Mohamedina said, says of what motivated her to move to Ghana. You hear stories about wealthy American African folks like Oprah being prevented from entering a store, or Jay-Z being barred from buying an apartment. The sister adds, these things happen regardless if you're celebrity or second-class citizens. That was one of the biggest concerns for me. In America, you always have to try to prove yourself. But in Africa, in Ghana, she says it doesn't have to prove herself to anyone. I'm a champion here, she says. I went to the university. I like to win. And so I refuse to be put into a situation where I'll never win. And believe me, brothers and sisters, in this situation, we will never, not as a people, not as a collective, we will never win. Not designed for it. Muhammadina says that in Ghana, she still enjoys some of the things she used to enjoy in New York, like parties and socializing and so forth. Upon realizing her nationality, she narrates, Ghanaians were wondering why she chose to live there. In Ghana, there are certain privileges for being an American, but it's great to appreciate it because that's something you won't get in America. After observing a huge wave of American Africans located in Africa, she decided to make a documentary called Blaxit. Blaxit. Remember Brexit? When the when Britain got out of the European Union? She wrote Blaxit.
So she's saying it's a black exodus.
Yeah, it's a black exodus. Mm-hmm. Allah Majinada acknowledges that the trend for American Africans moving to Africa started years ago. After most African countries gained independence, she says the numbers have significantly increased by now. You might not have electricity here in Africa, which they do. Sometimes it works, sometimes it depends upon the area you're in. But you will not get murdered by the police either. I made Blaxit to make people understand that they have alternatives and options. Most American Africans are unaware of these, that these options exist. Most of them think that they have to suffer as they are now and else to run to and have nowhere else to run to. But no, there are places to go. And where you should go is go home to Africa. She believes that more American Africans will move to Africa when they start to see it as a viable option. However, she warns, it isn't easy or cheap here either. But I think it's time that people should start to see that they can live that they can live somewhere else. And that was from Your Black World. And I agree. That is the move. I know a lot of discussion I've been hearing. I don't know about you, brother. And we'll get off into some of the particulars of what you're offering in terms of the language classes and so forth. And, of course, talk more about Transglobal Connections as an organization. And I looked at some of the, your website and literature. Outstanding, brother. I'm really proud of what you're offering to our people. But I think that, and you know, in having conversations, particularly the last, you know, few months, people are, you know, realizing what the Trump is doing, and the mindset of people in this country, and how it really favors, and that the majority of Caucasians really feel this way. I think it's really, and it's been time that we start to look at coming together, solving our problems, and going home. I think that us trying to civilize, us trying to make these folks respect our humanity and us as a people, I think that's over. That's long been over because it hasn't happened. And I know that that 20% of us, as opposed to the 80% of us, that 20% of us who are doing okay, they'll still talk about the beauty of America and the opportunity of America and this and that at the expense of the vast majority of our people. Because in this society, you're trained to think as an individual. You're not trained to think collectively. You're not trained to think of us as a people. In fact, what America perpetuates and promotes is individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. And as a consequence, the violent portion is what is the face, is it has put the face of the violence portion on us.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So we have a lot of work to do. And one of the things that we need to do is learn that there are alternatives, as I said in the article. And, of course, you propose those alternatives for our people. Number one, as an organization of what you do in Trans Global Connections, you offer, you know, you say, we are a group of change agents working to help leaders and organizations solve complex problems, enabling sustainable transformation. We provide independent, product-agnostic solutions centered on the people, processes and tools required to align, implement, and sustain the optimal strategy for leaders and organizations. We are TGC. TGC is Trans Global Connections. And one of the members, is that a group you founded?
Yeah, we founded that group, and we operate in the management consulting space, working with Black businesses and helping them to be able to outcompete the world. You know, we've done work on the continent, and one of our practices happens to focus on the language teaching methods and the acquisition of languages that can accelerate the way that we do business with each other in different parts of the world. Now, there are some brothers that have been doing some stellar and good work on the continent, folks that have already a long time ago done a Black exodus. There's a brother that started a similar school in Ghana, Accra, called Abibi Tumikasa. And he's doing wonderful and transformative work there because what he, in essence, is offering is the opportunity to learn our African languages, which needs to be a priority for any African across the world. If they have the time, energy, and willingness is to try their best to learn, even if it's at the novice, you know, level, a African language. So Abibi Tumikasa has been teaching Chui and Wolof, Yoruba, and some other well-known lingua francas. And we define a lingua franca as a language that allows you to communicate with a wide array of people, especially between nationalities or intra-national, in the case that a Chui, you know, you're able to use Chui to communicate with multiple ethnicities within, you know, Ghana. So we call that type of language a lingua franca. So if you're looking to travel to do business, to study, or to repatriate to the African continent, I've always been of the philosophy that your first priority should be to learn an African language, and your second priority should be to learn a language that allows you to communicate throughout the continent. So if we talk about French, albeit, you know, even though French is a colonial language, we do not look at it with any romantic lenses. You know, French is for us a tool that allows us to speak with the mama in Senegal and the baba in Cote d'Ivoire to the brother in the Congo. So if you're doing liberation work, if you're doing anti-colonial work, anti-imperialist work on the continent, if you're studying African literature, et cetera, it might behoove you to learn some of these languages, you know, some of these languages for these, you know, purposes. But if you're looking to gain a certain level of reverence or romantic notion around these European languages, Spanish and French, that we're teaching, then, you know, we're certainly not the destination for you.
Right, and that should be understood that why we are learning these, the purpose is
the better ability for us to communicate effectively with one another and understand one another so we can begin to develop and grow as a people. And, you know, because there, I mean, the reality is that, you know, when we make this repatriation, we make this exodus, you know, I always say, Brother Damani, the exodus in the Bible didn't happen. I think scholars, historians, archaeologists have proven, I know they consistently tried, boy, did they try, you know, it didn't happen. But an exodus must happen in terms of us getting out of the Western Hemisphere, getting out of underneath Caucasians and returning home. An exodus must happen, you know.
And part of that needs to include promoting and enforcing an internal exodus. So allowing the white in you to die in order to make room for a complete African as part of the continued re-Africanization process. Before we go to the continent, we need to self-evaluate some of those individualized tendencies that you spoke about at the beginning, so that when we do touch shore, that we're touching shore reborn anew with a new spirit, a new motivation to recapture everything that was lost, and to be able to look at the process as a equal exchange of minds versus us bringing something that is better, you know, because we happen to be born in a different side of the world. And therefore, everything that we bring becomes better than, you know, what's already there. And also be in a position to engage in the collective process to become independent enough, because to your point as well, I believe that the solution is to look inward. And we could say inward here in the U.S. as we continue to be here in the Abibi Maima, which, you know, Mama Marimba, you know, coined as a alternative to saying the diaspora. You know, Abibi Maima in Twi would mean loosely the children of Africa. Those of us that are here, you know, while we're here, how are we working internally to create the right level of silent power that allows us to your point, not worry about what folks are doing and how they feeling, how they caring, and not caring enough, you know, to try to save anybody but ourselves, right? In preparation for the work that we need to do, you know, on the continent. But in the diaspora, you know, when we talk about the Abibi Maima of South America, you know, just on the 26th and 28th, back to back, you know, we have two African leaders in Buenaventura, which is an area that is on the Pacific coast of Colombia.
Okay.
That area there, Buenaventura, for those that are listening, have access to Google Maps, I would just type in Buenaventura, Colombia. It'll come up about the size of Louisiana, predominantly of African descent. You have some indigenous peoples that have been there. But when we fought against captivity there, like we did everywhere else, and we won our freedom, part of that concession was reminiscent of the concessions that the Iroquois up north engaged in with the Europeans here, right? The Iroquois are a federation of tribes that include the Pequot tribe and some other tribes in New England, and they engaged in a concession with the U.S. government, and that's how we came to have a lot of these Native American prisons, if you will, but you know, we know them as reservations.
Right.
But these reservations, these lands are quasi-sovereign. You know, I think the sovereignty got tested with, you know, these oil pipelines you know, right? You know, I think that tested the limits of their true sovereignty. But in Buenaventura, The concession that they made, you know, was to acquire these thousands of hectares of land as a concession, and these lands are owned not individually, but as a collective.
That's great.
It's a wonderful, you know, thing that when I learned about it, you know, when I build, you know, with some of the activists and transformational leaders that are young that came last month and met, and we spoke and we both lectured at Xavier University. It was just a powerful learning experience for me, you know, to know that they have these collectively owned swaths of land that they've had since the end of the captivity period, and that they have been dying literally to protect who is killing them. Well, when we look at the geography of Buenaventura, it's a coastal territory in Colombia that happens to have the largest in terms of certainly the busiest port in South America, you know, where because of the infrastructure that has been invested into that port, a lot of the goods that come in and out of that region come through that port, even though their final destination might be another country outside of Colombia. It might be a neighboring country like Venezuela. It might be, you know, Panama. It might be other countries, but it's through that port that is second only to the Panama Canal in terms of how many containers actually move through that subcontinent. So you have the multinational corporation cartel. Then you also have the Mexican cartels that have been relocating to an area where they could continue to operate with impunity, have started to make a lot of inroads into that territory as well. Then you have the multinational farming cartel that are looking to appropriate the land, you know, for their own exploitation. Then you have the tourist industry, the hoteling and travel industries that are looking to appropriate a lot of the coastal lines, you know, for major multinational investments, right? You know, and then what that equates to is the hiring of the mercenaries that are looking for new ways to gain money after, you know, some of the war between the state and some of these guerrilla factors have dissipated. So these folks are being hired, either, you know, just take your pick. Right. They're being hired to assassinate individuals that are fighting to protect the lands where elder African women still farm, according to the science of the constellations and the mood, you know, the tides of the moon. Right. They're hiring them and they're killing off, you know, our African people. In unprecedented numbers, not just at, you know, if we look at Colombia, but when we look at the history of African resistance against a white supremacist complex, because I don't use white supremacy unless I use the word complex,
okay,
or dissidents, right? Right?
Yeah.
That have been fighting against structural racism. It might look, you know, like the Colombian version, which just means instead of using English, they're using Spanish.
Right.
Right. But they're fighting against structural racism, genocide, and centuries of oppression. Right. They're killing them. I get to go and do a lecture and then go back home, you know, put on the TV and put on, you know, something I might want to watch, right? They don't get to do that, right? If they make a lecture, 9 times out of 10, it's 50-50, you know, whether or not, you know, certain individuals will make it home alive. So we have, you know, two individuals that were killed on the 26th and the 28th, prominent individuals within One of them is within their 30s. Other one's within their
40s. Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Before then, just about 6 months ago, you had four individuals that were killed, that were leaders. Last year around this time, you had a sister on the other side of Colombia that was fighting the encroachment of these farming and these hoteling industry cartels into their coastal lands of Cartagena. Cartagena is better known for a lot of us here because of its proximity to Bogota. A lot of the Africans from Cartagena, which is about 90% black, and the rest is indigenous.
Cartagena is 90% African?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. The Coastal Alliance, absolutely. When you go there, is like going to a Caribbean country. In fact, the culture is a Caribbean gastronomy, you know, what we eat, the music, what we listen to, what we dance to. It's closer to Afro-Caribbean culture. You know, when you go to Buenaventura, the culture there is something that we really need to tap into, because the Africanisms that have been retained in Buenaventura are closer to continental African than Afro-Caribbean than of the Afro-Caribbean flavor.
Wow.
There you still got Bantu names, right?
That
are being given and passed down to children. Their hairstyles, you still have a lot of Central African hairstyles that are being worn, you know, by the woman, right? So their whole flow is more reminiscent of a Central, you know, African aesthetic than a Afro-Caribbean African aesthetic, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, last year we had this sister that got beheaded, a prominent warrior, you know, for against terrorism, you know, terrorism that involves, you know, the ecology, you know, using methods to poison the crops, to poison the rivers, to displace people from that area to then come in and build hotels in that area, and preventing people from having access to the beaches where they could get on their canoes and actually continue to fish for a living. So this sister did that kind of work, Baba, right? And she was going home one night. Some of these higher mercenaries abducted her, beheaded her, and then a month later beheaded her husband. Right? So these are African people. So when I say let's learn Spanish, I'm not saying let's romanticize Don Quixote. I'm not saying that, I want to teach you how to go and order a paella.
Yeah,
you know, I want to teach you how it is that we speak Spanish, you know, how Europeans speak Spanish, how we speak Spanish, but more importantly, how can you connect,
right,
and discover a whole world that, because of the process of European indoctrination and miseducation, has been denied to you,
right?
You've been bamboozled into thinking that these individuals that are south of the, you know, Rio Grande, you know, are Spanish. You know, the only thing Spanish is the language that they speak. You know, and I always tell my students is that, you know, let's remove, you know, some of these preconceived notions and these indoctrinations that have been laying dormant in our minds. If I speak English, it doesn't make me an English man. So if you're in New York, you know, you hear somebody, and just because they're Puerto Rican, might be calling themselves, you know, Spanish, or Dominican might be calling themselves Spanish, doesn't mean that you and your right mind need to follow that foolishness and call them Spanish as well. You know, Spanish is the language that they speak.
Right.
And they have been a victim of the Ma'afa, and that's what we got. You know, we need to find a way to connect, you know, with our people, you know, that are doing that work, or if they're not doing that work, finding a way to help them do that work.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
You know, and vice versa. So that's I think the connections, you know, because we're not selling a product, you know, we're not selling a service, you know, we're providing a service, or we're not here to do a promo. You know, I don't believe and capitalist advertisements. You know, I believe in sharing the work that we're doing because our work needs to be
right
mission oriented. If it's
exactly.
not mission oriented, throw it into the wastebasket, man. You know, because at the end of the day, we don't need we don't need any more commodities, and our culture should be the last thing that should be commoditized. So this
that's
is,
for sure.
You know, for us, you know, a mission-based, you know, type of work, whether we get one student or we get 100, we're going to continue to press forward because we really believe in that work and we really do feel the pain, you know, of our sisters right now, sisters and brothers, and they need our help because they look to us not to emulate us, not to try to bite our style, because they got, you know, when you African, you got your own style,
right.
man. You don't need to, you know, we don't bite, you know, right?
That's
you know,
right.
they
That's
look
right.
to us for inspiration. They look at some of the books that we've written and they try to translate it loosely in their own way. They look at some of the quotes that we put out, you know, and that we have in English on John Henry Clark to Angela Davis to, you know, whoever. And they see a sense of themselves in these pictures. They see their faces and they see the things that that we've done, that their ancestors have done here in the U.S. And they don't see our people here as a separate people, you know, so it then becomes our responsibility to learn some of the things that they have retained that are part of our culture. And in return, we need to teach what we have done as part of our resistance, you know, what those victories have been, right? How did we achieve some of the victories that we've gained? Where have we lost? Sharing, you know, and doing that in a medium that they're able to understand so that we're able to cycle this knowledge, you know, for the purposes of African sovereignty or global, you know, African sovereignty. When we say free the land, you know, we need to be able to say, okay, yeah, let's free the land, but do we got any land that's free right now? Oh, okay. Oh, so yeah. So we got some free land where? All right, so how do I get a little piece of that land, right? Because
yep.
that's the process of where we are. You know, it's like we need to free the land while we're simultaneously protecting the land that we've already freed, right? You know,
because
by the time we get to that destination, we will have lost, you know, a precious, you know, resource that we currently, you know, own and control, which, you know, there aren't many. So I needed to really make that for me part of the focal point, you know, because I'm really sad and mad, you know, in terms of what's going on,
sure,
you know, with our people
sure.
right now,
all
know,
over,
in
all Colombia. Over,
all over,
yeah, all over,
all over, yeah.
Because I mean, you know, I know you're pretty aware of what's happening in West Papua New Guinea. The same thing with the
yep.
Indonesians imposing themselves and killing those brothers and sisters to take their
outright.
Land with the assistance of the United States and Britain and so forth, you know. But we got a caller, Brother Damani. I want to get this caller in. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradio.com, and you're on with Brother Damani Aquil. 626, go ahead, my brother or sister. You're on.
Good morning, Brother Oshi. This is Sister Rahida from the Shrine of the Black Madonna in Atlanta. How you doing?
Oh, hey, my sister. How are you? Well, thank you. Yes.
I'm good. I've tried to remember to join you on this radio broadcast, but you know, this comes up. I'm not feeling good. You know, I'm gone or something. So I'm
well, now
so
you're here
to be able to
yes.
catch up with you.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
But yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. So I kind of came in on the middle of my brother's, you know, talk. They were talking about the diaspora and how, I guess, political and social mechanisms have divided us as a people. I did hear him say something about a model. I can't remember exactly because I think you just mentioned it once. But I believe that I'm going to introduce a new concept that may not have been discussed in your talk. It's called the distributed leadership model. Have you heard of it?
I haven't.
No, and I haven't either, sister.
Okay, by the distributed leadership model is meant that there are no more leaders. We as a people, I believe, especially people who are over 50, 60 years old, we have been around for a while. And lots of talk, lots of rhetoric, lots of, you know, solutions, lots of problem solving and all. I believe that we have talked it to death. We all know what the basic problem is, that there are 10 systems of oppression in place and actively oppressing us at any given time, especially in the United States, but in the world at large. And we have seen in the past also that our designated leaders have been cut down one at a time. And there has been an outright assault on African descent in the world. With that said, I believe that we, as you have mentioned, we need to focus on a proactive approach to resolving these oppressive issues that constantly are bombarding us on a day-to-day basis. As far as education, we may need to establish our own homeschooling systems. As far as economics, we have people who have businesses. We need to get the word out to where these businesses are. We need to, how would we say, do a grassroots kind of an approach as far as like getting the word out about where the businesses are, making sure that we support them. The Nation of Islam here in the city has claimed an area called the Bluffs in the city. They have a restaurant there. There is a Your Supermarket there. A bakery is coming this year, probably in the summer. And they have claimed this area as their own. They're opening up cleaners. They're opening up shoe repairs, these types of things. And we at the Shrine of the Black Madonna have a bookstore on Ralph David Abernathy where we have their flyers. We carry their bean pies. And we are a collective economic effort. There are many writers. There are people who make products that we sell in the bookstore. So the Nation of Islam is aware of that. They send their people to our place. We send our people to their place. And basically, that's how it's done. We don't have to have, and how do we say, we don't have to have anyone's approval to do that. We just do what every other ethnic group has been doing for centuries. It is a new model for us, but we have to proactively go about changing the direction that we have been kind of set on. And it's an individual effort. Distributed leadership basically means we have leaders all over the place, and we follow their example.
Well, you know, it's like the whole idea that in this day and time for us as a people, we don't need a charismatic leader. We need the charismatic program. In fact,
correct.
We need a cadre of leadership. So if one of the leaders doesn't function, we continue with the program. We turn the page and continue with the program. We, you know, and I know that the Nation of Islam, their main leaders, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and of course he can't live forever, you know. But the bottom line is that we don't need a image. We need a program, and that program must be holistic. It must be collective. We're opening up the Cafe Ulu, Us Lifting Us. And that is a cooperative. And these kinds of programs and models need to be replicated, not just in this country, but with African people, period. In the Caribbean, in South America, on the continent, wherever African people reside, we must pull our resources together to do for ourselves. I think that's the bottom line. We're coming up on a break right here. Stay with us on the break, Brother Damani, okay? And my sister, stay with us. We're coming up on a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradio.com.
Excuse me. Can somebody please tell me why we got to celebrate Black History Month? I want to know why they gave us just a month. the shortest month.
I am here to represent the struggle that has gone on for 300 or more years.
We're not American. We are people who formerly were Africans who were kidnapped and brought to America.
And I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed and the ghetto without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government.
It's a common misconception that Europeans gave us Black History Month. In actuality, it spawned from Dr. Carter G. Woodson. He was a visionary who believed history should be used as a source of motivation and a weapon against misinformation and the intellectual warfare against Black people in the diaspora. So he began developing the concept of Black History Week. Yes, that's where it started. And this concept came to life in February of 1926 and later turned into Black History Month. He chose the month of February because this is the month Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln was born. He acknowledged Lincoln for signing the Emancipation Proclamation, and naturally he believed Frederick Douglass was an example of determination for all Black people. Woodson was a dedicated scholar, a passionate writer whose pen stayed in constant motion, who was constantly teaching and documenting, all for the advancement of Black people. Dr. Woodson was the founder and publisher of the Journal of Negro History. He was a regular columnist for Marcus Garvey's weekly journal, Negro World. In 1915, he founded the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. In 1920, he founded the oldest operating African American book publishing company, Associated Publishers. And he wrote over 20 books. And his most famous work was The Miseducation of the Negro, which was written in 1933. Many Black scholars find this prolific book even more relevant in today's day and time. But just as important as who fought for Black history is why.
First, you have to realize that up until 1959, Africa was dominated by the colonial powers, and by the colonial powers of Europe having complete control over Africa, they projected the image of Africa negatively. They projected Africa always in a negative light. Jungles, savages, cannibals, nothing civilized. And naturally, it was so negative until it was negative to you and me. And you and I began to hate it. We didn't want anybody to tell us anything about Africa, and much less call us an African. And in hating Africa and hating the African, we ended up even hating ourselves without even realizing it. Because you can't hate the roots of a tree and not hate the tree. You can't hate your origin and not end up hating yourself.
May I say something to you to give you a true knowledge of yourself and life so that the same glory and success attained by other men who understand themselves may be yours? Man in the full knowledge of himself is a superb and supreme creature of creation. When man becomes possessor of the knowledge of himself, he becomes master of his environment, the captain of his own ship, the director of his own destiny, the accomplisher of his own ends.
You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Do you realize that one of the great aims of all those who would enslave or who are enslaving is to keep the truth away from them? This is a tactic, a well-known tactic. Keep the truth out. Don't let the people know.
Much like these other great leaders, Dr. Woodson, having obtained his PhD from Harvard and being a professor at Howard University, saw firsthand how African American contributions were constantly overlooked, ignored, and suppressed by the writers of the textbooks and the teachers. And with Woodson coming from the world of academia, he was also very critical of how the institution of higher learning dealt with Black people. He believed they were pushing out educated servants that were thoroughly indoctrinated, not people who would return to their community and knew how to create their own. But instead, producing individuals that would depend on the same people that subjugated them. Dr. Woodson spent his life motivating Black people with their history. His last work was the Encyclopedia Africana. It would have been a 6-volume work, but on April 3rd, 1950, at the age of 74, Dr. Woodson was laid to rest before it could be finished. Black History Month was never intended for us to restrict the learning of our history to February only. It was simply a way to collectively wake up our consciousness from what we were not being taught. Dr. Woodson understood that we cannot rely on any institution or any other race to teach us about us, which is why he devoted his life to writing our history for you. And for that reason, this great ancestor, we honor. Ashe? Ashe. The first person to comment below with the Carter G. Woodson quote, "I will personally mail you my copy of The Miseducation of the Negro," signed by the great Griot.
Yeah.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You can join this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We're talking today with my good friend and outstanding young man. I've always been very impressed with him and what he has to bring, and that is Brother Damani Aquil. Damani Aquil.
Yes, Baba. Give thanks. Give thanks, Baba. And I wanted to let you know, man, you got a lot of flavor, man. I appreciate that song, man. That joint right there. I'm trying to be like you, man.
But, okay, you know, that's just a Shabless. You know, Shabless in effect.
Look, I'm trying to keep it covered. I really appreciate, you know, the mama jumping in and making, you know, what I consider to be some very true and very direct, you know, points. I think that we cannot be reminded enough or often enough about the need to go back to examples that have been given to us by the Kikongo model, if you want to go with Mbongi, right, or other models. You know, I know the Pul in Senegal also have provided a very ancient model of situational leadership or decentralized, you know, leadership. She called it something else, but, you know, we could call it, you know, many different things. I think the point is very well taken, that this cult of personality type of leadership, following of leadership that we've engaged in, you know, for the last four decades, you know, it has not yielded a return on our investment. And certainly it's not the right model. It's not the model that comes from an African tradition. So, yeah, the Nation of Islam, you know, I like what the Shrine of the Black Madonna is doing in the Atlanta metro area. They tend to take the position that if you're not working against, you know, against us, you know, with the enemy, you know, we can see about working with you, you know, and we don't need to necessarily agree, you know, with your philosophical, political philosophies 100%, as long as, you know, you're trying to do some good for the community, you know, you have a space here, you know. So they've been very diverse in the types of Africans that have had the opportunity and the honor to be able to speak and do events, you know, there. So they're you know, they are obviously, the sister is not just talking, you know. I think that she is obviously representing and doing the work, you know, as well. And on top of that, I would just say that, and that is the model, when we talk about leadership models, that the leadership model that these young brothers and sisters are actually employing in Buenaventura, Cartagena, is a decentralized model. That's why they have not been able to exterminate the resistance, you know, because when you kill one, another one steps up.
That's right.
And it becomes very, very important for us to recognize that, and to lend and to share it, you know, as a model. Look, you know, it hurts, it's painful, and we're dying, and we're still fighting, and we're still able to fight, and we're still able to step up and do the work, because the work is not gender based, in a sense that it's not dominated by men or dominated by women.
That's right.
It is both men and women that have locked arms together, you know, there. And if they kill my husband, I'm gonna step up. If they kill my queen, my wife, I'm gonna step up, you know. And I think that these are things that we need to look at, and not jump, you know. I think some of us, I know certainly for me, I have been guilty of assuming that some of the same paradigms and approaches that we've had here are able to be translated or exported over there. You know, so as I continued to analyze things a little bit more deeply, I started to appreciate some of the diversity in which we approach the problems. And I think that's what we're talking about you know, here is when we talk about African sovereignty, is taking what has worked in the past, but looking for new models that will allow us to gain the level of power. You know, the sister mentioned examples of what I would consider silent power, you know, claiming certain areas that are non-desirable areas and then transforming those areas in Detroit and New York and Atlanta and Oakland, you know, wherever we are, you know, without asking for permission or looking for recognition, is a form of silent power, you know, if it leads to a level of transformation where we could provide, you know, the things that we need, those things that John Henry Clark talked about. So I just wanted to appreciate that contribution, you know, because again, I think that we cannot be reminded enough. I do not subscribe to the concept of entrepreneurship, for an example.
I don't either.
Right?
I don't either.
I think
I don't subscribe to that.
I'm not surprised. I'm going to say I'm not surprised that you don't, you know, but I'm going to tell you why I don't, right? To me, entrepreneurship has allowed for the devil of individualism,
yes,
to creep in into the process of empowerment, you know, at the individual level. I do believe it, empowerment at an individual level, if it's connected to
right.
a collective mission, right? But
yes,
not, you know, as an end all be all. So I do believe in the building of wealth. I do believe in building enterprises. We have models, you know, right? You know, Garvey was one, right? So I look at it from a collective economist, the eyes of a collective economist, right?
Yes.
So cooperative economics, right? And to me, I want to engage in business transactions that allow for all of us to find a way to make money.
Right on.
Right? Or to conduct my business in a way that connects to a mission. Right. So entrepreneurship to me, it lacks that. Right. It's just driven off of the acquisition of money. Right. At times. And it could be a very, very, very dangerous cognitive trap, you know, for us in terms of subscribing success, artificial success at the individual or group level.
Yeah. We have our sister. She's still on with us. Would you do you have a comment? Sister Bush, you have a comment?
Well, I've appreciated everything that he has said. Blessings to both of you, and thank you so much. The decentralized model that you speak of is the same thing, I think, in broad strokes, of the distributed leadership model. I think basically no one's walking around with a target on their back, and mentally we're all on the same page. I hear you very loud and clear about the individualism of entrepreneurship, granted. But I believe that the strong stroke that we have to our advantage is institutions, establishing institutions that take care of the needs of the people ongoing. This would be something that would have served those who came before us and that will serve those who come after us. But in our lifetime, if we contribute to these institutions that take care of our needs, you know, perhaps your model of communalism, anti-individualism, will be something that is solvent. But I believe that mentally, the chains are still attached to a lot of us.
Oh.
And because of that, we have to at least show communality in the establishing and maintenance and reinforcing of our institutions. So I hear you so loud and clear about the individualistic entrepreneurship model not being a healthy one, but it is one that we are subject to day in and day out. So we have land. We have land in South Carolina. We have land in Georgia. that is being utilized to help us feed ourselves, at least. We have the capability of using agriculture, horticulture, to, animal husbandry in order to feed ourselves. And as we see this sickle of oppression coming at us at an even faster daily pace, we have to allow our minds to go forward in front of us to say, how will we eat in 20 years? How will we eat in 50 years? At the rate that this oppression is coming at us, how will we clothe ourselves? How will we house ourselves? These things can be managed in an institutional type of a model. So the Shrine of the Black Madonna, NOI, I believe that they are establishing institutions which are beneficial to have our needs met. So there are, you know, other ways to think about this getting our needs met issue. But those of us who are conscious versus those of us who are woke, there's a vast milieu in the middle, you know what I mean, of people who are in process of becoming woke. But at least we have come some distance from being shackled physically and psychologically. I think the shackles have, you know, been removed from us physically, but psychologically we're still subject to, how would we say, people who are not as woke as some of us would prefer them to be.
I should. We also have another caller. You're on the line here with African Perspectives on Time for an Awakening with Brother Damani Aquil. 646, go ahead.
Hey, Brother Osi, I just wanted to listen for a few minutes, man.
Well, that's
can
good.
Can you just keep me on hold?
I sure can.
I'm in the middle of something.
All right. Okay, my brother, you're on. Okay, Brother Damani, you heard what the sister had to say, and I know that I definitely agree with her in terms of the collective portion of it. I know that I've been approached a number of times to get off into network marketing because of some perceived amount of people that I know and so forth and the kind of person I am, but I can't do it. I could never do it. I've tried. But I could never do it. Believe me, I tried. You know, I threw my money down. I went through this, that, and the other. But no, I can't do it. And I know one of them is the Buy Black movement that's coming out of Lithonia. Good brothers and sisters. I know them. Brother Chiki Akua, Dr. Chiki Akua, good brother. But the problem, of course, is that that's another model of, I mean, when you go to a presentation, who wants to be rich? Who wants to be a millionaire? I don't want to be rich. I don't want to be a millionaire. I want us to be a self-contained, sovereign, independent, liberated people. That's what I want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I hope transpires. Not that I become rich. I don't want to be rich, you know? I want us to be able to sustain ourselves and to grow with one another, Brother Damani.
Right. There's a, you know, wealth is transferable, you know, riches, you know, is speculative, you know, and they could come and go, you know, with the ebb and flows of water. Right. I do also agree with, you know, the sister and it's, you know, sister, what you said, it, you know, are things that in my opinion, are not really subject for debate, and that they need to be said. The whole notion of how do we guarantee the investments that we're making at the individual level can only be protected through the establishment of organizations and institutions. You know, the Nation of Islam, right, is not a organization that started today, right? You know, we're looking at a long legacy of work of countless unknown Africans that have devoted their lives in a very humble way, you know, to be able to get to where we are today, and if you happen to be a member of the Nation of Islam, then there's a lot of hope in that your future generations can also benefit from that investment. You know, there's a larger guarantee that the Nation of Islam, you know, will be around, you know, tomorrow. You know, when we look at where we've come from, Detroit, right? You know, when we talk about the history of the Shrine of the Black Madonna all the way to present day Atlanta, right? It's an institution. It will continue to be here. The way that it looks like tomorrow might not look like today, but we could pretty much guarantee that it will be around, continuing to do the work. It might be grander in scale, it might be smaller, but it will be here, right? And the same for the nation. And I think that if we continue to press forward in a process of nation building, liberation, you know, African liberation or African sovereignty, in a way that continues to build upon the legacy of creating institutions and organizations for the advancement of our interests, then to me, that's a worthwhile effort. And it could be done in the most humblest way. You know, we don't need to necessarily say, hey, the only way I could do institutional building is if I, you know, create another UNIA, you know, and if I'm not ready, you know, then I can't really do, you know, nation building work at that level. Well, no, not necessarily. You know, you could take, there's examples of you know, there's cooperatives, there are the SUSU economic systems that are being used to finance, you know, homes and businesses and taking control of certain communities. You know, we have a cooperative that stood up to say, you know, we want to provide an alternative to Airbnb, you know, here in Atlanta, you know, so we're going to call it the Ukaribu Collective, and it represents four liberated independent private properties that are being used to house our warrior scholars, so that when they come into Atlanta, we could circulate that black dollar, right? So we could do it at a very small level, you know, and this is less to you, Mama, and you, Baba, because, you know, obviously I'm the young one. I'm speaking to my generation, you know, here, you know, that might be questioning as to the how, you know, like I don't have the time to study Marcus Garvey, but I want to engage in supporting an institution or creating an institutional building mindset. You know, we could start at a very small, you know, level, and continue to press forward and support, you know, these larger institutions that, you know, because when I stop at a red light and I buy a bag of fruits and a bean pie on Martin Luther King Ave in Atlanta, it's not because I'm a Muslim, you know, of the flavor of the Nation of Islam variety, right? It's because I believe in the process of institution building and the model that they've created. You mentioned the land, you know, the addressing those John Henry Clark needs. They're attempting to do that in their own, you know, way. And so I support them. I buy that. And to me, maybe it's because I'm really feeling what they're doing in the spirit of African liberation, that pie tastes hella good. Sure. I'm not sure if it's really good, but it tastes hella good when I eat it, that's right? And sure. That orange, you know, tastes extra sweeter to me, right? You know, and I think that's just that, you know, the blessings that you get from engaging in those actions. So, you know, give thanks.
That's right. That's that whole idea, and I agree, you know. And to me, if they're selling a Supreme bean pie out of Chicago, it is very good, you know. And I mean, it's extremely. And I've been a subscriber of the Final Call newspaper for, I don't know, maybe 10 years. But the bottom line is that we need institution building. We need to develop a collective mindset. Even when we discussed reparations a few months ago, Brother Damani, my whole idea of reparations is to build institutions for ourselves. Granted, I know we won't get reparations in the state that we're in, and it's particularly in the state of mind that we're in. And I remember reading an article many, many, many years ago, probably maybe 30 some years ago, by a Caucasian Jewish, European Jewish editorialist. I don't know if it was the Washington Post or the New York Times, doesn't matter. But this is what he said, Charles Kuttheimer. This is what he said. He said, we have given them welfare. We have given them affirmative action. We have given them all these handouts. Let's give them reparations. Let's just say for this discussion, 20,000 a individual, 40,000 a family, depending upon the number of that family, could be more, whatever. Let's give them that. Because in the state of mind that they're in, this would act as a stimulus package for this economy. They won't pull that money together. They'll buy Cadillacs. They'll buy this. They'll buy that. They'll buy jewelry. And we will get that money back within a year or less. Let's give. And then once we have done that, now we're done with them. No more class action lawsuits. No more affirmative act. No more nothing. And if you have a complaint or a serious issue and you don't have anybody to corroborate it or to support what your position is, it's over. So we can go now on as business as usual without any fear of any legal challenge, you know. And so that is the mindset of a lot of our people that we're talking about reparations. I want my check, as opposed to saying, let's get strong, make the position to build institutions for ourselves, not just, of course, not here, but on the continent and through other places in the diaspora. Because, see, I don't believe here in this country that we can do something so outstanding as a collective that will not be challenged. We can look at, as Malcolm said, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history coming out of our captivity and past the Reconstruction period, when we had to come together because of segregation and so forth, where we had to have our own hotels and restaurants and so forth. We had to do these things. And look what happened. We became prosperous. Look what happened in Tulsa and in Rosewood and Elaine, Arkansas, and out there in L.A., Allentown. Look what happened in all these places. And then the Caucasian, in his evil mean-spiritedness and jealousy and envy, moved on these places, stole, raped, and pillaged, and then burned them to the ground. And no one was prosecuted for the crime they committed against us. And they wound up putting us in concentration camps or in jail and destroying those communities. Even the more contemporary one in Haiti community in the Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina area. That was destroyed by the so-called model cities and putting an expressway right through the heart of that community, which has been done here, I'm not in the north, but it's been done in the north because I know I'm from Milwaukee and it was done in Milwaukee, you know. So I'm saying is that I don't see a real coming together of our people in this land. That is me. I'm a staunch Pan-Africanist. I believe that the salvation for African people lies in us going back to Africa, not like we did, like you mentioned earlier, Brother Damani, with the mindset that we are better because we are trained in the West and we are somehow a different people. So we go back to Liberia and we rule in a very negative way and looking down upon the Africans because we now wear European clothes and we've been European trained. You see,
and you know, I'll say this, you know, because I agree with your position on reparations, and I do believe in reparations for our people, and my take on reparations, and this is not out of ignorance, because I've worked with a lot of individuals in the reparations movement, and I've done a lot of the research, and my conclusion ultimately leads me to stand on this belief, is that for me, reparations is repairing our the relationships of power dynamics for us, right? We need to repair that, right? When we repair the relationships of power dynamics and get the level of power, you know, that we need, then we don't need to worry about any resources that are owed to us, you know, because we could take those back, right? We don't need to ask, you know. We will be able to guarantee the sovereignty and protect the future interests of our generation until we repair these broken power dynamics through the you know, losing these battles that we've lost. You know, we haven't lost the war, you know, but we've lost some battles, and we can't go back and cry foul when we lose a battle. We need to, you know, come back and regroup and do what we need to do as a people, which includes everything, in my opinion, that we've discussed, you know, today and more, right? And then, you know, we would have reestablished a level of power dynamics that ensures that, you know, that's for the best interest, you know, for our people, you know, now and in the future. And, you know, what I want to do is at this moment is just humbly thank you for giving me the opportunity to, you know, be on your show again. I have to break away now. But this has been good. I really appreciate, you know, the learning.
Well, Robert, you know, Brother Damani Aquil, you are always welcome here. I always look for you to come on to provide some information, some technical information, some historical information. I appreciate what you have done. I appreciate the organization that you're the Trans Global Connections that you created, the offering of the language classes so we can communicate with our people in a clear understanding of the direction that we need to go. Because you know you have a home right here on African Perspectives, because right here you talk about the same things we talk about: independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. That is the mode, that is the direction. So, Brother Damani, I appreciate you very much, and have a safe and have a blessed and wonderful day, dear brother.
Asante sana, Baba.
All right. Thank you, Brother Damani. We appreciate it very much. Sister, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
Well, thank you for holding on, and thank you for listening and being a part of the discussion today. As we talk about the importance of communications amongst our people, I didn't get a chance to talk enough about it. I didn't know my brother had to go, but hey, things happen, and I appreciate whatever time that he can give to the discussion. He has a program that teaches our people, and we didn't even get off into it because it's an on-site as well as a internet program. Computer program dealing with teaching Spanish and French so our people can communicate with each other. I know that on the continent, if you're in Cote d'Ivoire or if you're in Senegal, that would become very handy. Obviously, it would be better if you knew Wolof or, you know, any of the other multiple number of languages that our people speak. I'm definitely a proponent of Kiswahili. I remember back in the days, in the 60s and so forth, when the advent of Kwanzaa being created in 66 and other things happened, they said, well, we must learn an African language. And I agree with that. I agree that we need to be multilingual. One argument is that we are multilingual because we speak the language of this country, but we also speak a kind of Ebonics, if you want to use that word. Mm-hmm. You know, understand. To communicate with, you know. But the reality is that we need communications, clear communications with ourselves, with each other, and not just in this country, but on throughout the diaspora and on the continent. I think that the move should be for us to establish a African Union, global African Union, a global African Union, where brothers and sisters on the continent who have the land, And us who have, because really, I don't know if you would agree, but I think we have all that we need. We have all the expertise that we need if we come together to utilize it. We have people who are architects. We have engineers. We have science. We have everything. If the mindset of those brothers and sisters would be about nation building and going back to Africa to develop Africa, to develop the United States of Africa, the vision that Kwame Nkrumah had, the vision that Patrice Lumumba had, the vision that Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop had, the vision that, yes, Idi Amin Dada had, until the Western press made him sound like he was some kind of madman, some kind of cannibal. I don't listen to anything that the Western press says about any of our people. In fact, everything, and I told my grandson this the other day, I said, man, you know what? You know, believe not of what you hear or even sometimes what you read and half of what you see. Because we live in a society that is based on and continues to perpetuate images and notions of us being inferior, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I totally agree with all the points that you just enumerated. And I am also a Pan-Africanist for all the points that you enumerated. I do believe that people are starting to wake up from their silos of, as I mentioned before, individuality. And there is a sense of communalism that is coming back amongst us in bigger and bigger numbers. But to digress, anytime we show any type of unification mentality, anytime we come together in a positive, productive way, it will be challenged in this Western, environment that we exist in. It's been shown in the past. Everything that we do, they're watching, and they have a vested interest in not allowing us to succeed or become segregated from them. They realize now that we are the consumer class, and upon which they have built their wealth from time immemorial. So with all of this known and said, as we both understand, the need for an institutional communal mindset is important, just taking off. I at my age will not see it, but I can certainly be a proactive part of it. I cannot wait until your coffee shop opens up. It's the answer to a prayer and a dream.
All right, I hear you.
I cannot wait.
Me either. But, in fact, I'm going there. Yeah. I'm going there today to see the progress that we have made. I haven't been since I got back from out of town. I had to leave town. I had to go to Milwaukee. And so I haven't been there in a couple of weeks. So I'm going today to see the progress that we have made and see how ready we are for the soft opening. In fact, when the soft opening happens, I will call you and invite you to come and to see what Cafe Ulu looks like and things that are going to go on there. I will definitely do that. And that should be coming up within a matter of days. I'm hoping in a matter of days.
I and my friends cannot wait, okay?
But, you know, you said something.
Because I've been sharing the story, okay?
Good. Thank you for that.
I am your top networker, and, you know, I'm a great communicator, and I get the word around.
Outstanding.
So,
Ashe.
I just feel it's such a blessing to be able to speak with you again, as I have in the past, face-to-face. But
always.
It's wonderful that you have this forum. And I appreciate so much Brother Damani Akili. And, it's just wonderful what you're doing and having this venue. And as you said, communication is key.
Well,
if people are more like-minded,
you continue to listen. I have some good other brothers and sisters that do listen, and you get a chance to talk with them. Brother Jay out of New York, Brother Joe out of Philadelphia, Brother Marcus out of Memphis, and a few others, some brothers out of Milwaukee, you know, and some sisters, one brother. So there's a group of us, and I know there are more listeners. The bottom line is these are like-minded people. These brothers and sisters believe in doing for self. They believe in closing ranks, pulling resources, and doing for themselves. We're not begging nobody. We're truly not bowing, bending, and scraping. We don't, we, We don't want what the Caucasian has. We want to develop things for ourselves. We want the independence, the self-determination, the liberation, and sovereignty for us as a people, not just here in Atlanta or in the United States, but collectively, globally. We want this to happen. Yep. What has always bothered me, sister, is the fact that here we are as an African people. We're not poor. We have all the resources that the world wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. That's a Dr. John Henry Clark quote, but it's very, very pointed and very real. Because under the feet of African people is all of the diamonds, gold, silver, bauxite, cobalt, uranium, you name it. It is all there. There are other countries that are resource poor, but yet they want to be in Africa. The Chinese want to be in Africa so bad that they are marrying Ugandan. They are marrying Ugandan women so they can stake their claim to land and resources. You know, and how the Chinese operate, they'll come in and they'll say, well, we'll build you this, that, or the other, a bridge, a road, a pump, whatever. And they will only use Chinese labor. Many of the laborers are prisoners. You know,
I'm aware.
You're aware, yes. Yeah. You know, but other groups as well, because really the European hasn't left. The South in Southern Africa or the country of Azania is still controlled by Europeans. Namibia still controlled by Europeans. You know, so we have lots of work to do in terms of helping to reclaim the African mind.
But, you know, if I could interject, but you see, we have been so victimized in, how would we say, we've been victimized, but we've also been indoctrinated. We've been conditioned to hate the African continent as the dark continent. We've been conditioned and we've been, how would we say, mind controlled to see ourselves as less than. So underneath this whole umbrella, you see, they have set up this blockade between the westernized African-American mentality and our African brothers on the continent and in the diaspora in general. But you see, we're starting to realize that the diaspora is the greater umbrella under which we all exist. And we're starting to actually soften our views and our approach to our African brothers and sisters. And we're starting to network back and forth across the oceans, you see. And this is a huge move, I believe. I don't know when it happened, but even back when Booker T and W.E.B. Du Bois and Carter G. Woodson and all the great minds, the talented 10th, and all that amalgamation of African intellect, you see, they were waking up. They were woke, but we still had that separation. But I believe that it's starting to crumble now. There are Africans here, Africans on the continent that are doing business across the oceans. We are establishing institutions across the oceans, and we are starting to look back at Mother Africa as a potential for us to prosper and benefit as human beings. There has been a movement of westernized African Americans who have moved back to the continent, as I understand. I have not talked to any. I have seen this in a narrative. I've read it in articles that have been written about repatriated Africans who have moved back to the continent, to Ghana, to Kenya. So, and I believe that the present administration is another catalyst that people are being forced to recognize that this country is no longer really in need of us. We have become persona non grata, so to speak. And how the laws and the legislature and all that stuff is going It is not favorable. We are starting to have to stand up and fight back. And we're starting to realize that this is not our land of opportunity. It never has been. We have never been included in the fabric of America. When the Constitution was formed, we were not part of that. It was never intended for us to benefit off of all those things that are enumerated in our Constitution. So people are starting to wake up and really recognize that, you know, nobody's coming to help us. We've got to become self-sufficient. We've got to start doing for self. It's way past time for that to start to happen. And so sometimes adversity is the best catalyst. And I know you understand what I'm saying.
Sure.
Nothing wrong with that. But, you know, that is another part of distributed leadership. It's another part of, an individual communalism, if you would. Everybody's got to stand up and think communality, which is part of our soul base. You know, as African people, we are a communal people.
Yes.
When we were extracted from the motherland and we were rubbing elbows with these European Caucasoids, that's when we started taking up the poison of individuality, capitalism, commerciality, all those things. So now that we're aware of that and we know that we have a deep spirituality that we must return to so that we can be a whole people, our sense of ritualism was also taken away from us when our spirituality was extracted from us. So we're returning to that little by little, but sure as shooting, we're returning to that. And we're becoming more whole, I believe, as a people, as an ethnic group. So I'm going to stop because sometimes I rattle on, but we understand
what I'm saying. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And we definitely appreciate it. We appreciate you listening and contributing today to this conversation. Brother Damani Aquil was my guest who talked about the program that he has with Trans Global Connections in teaching the opportunity to learn Spanish and to learn French and pretty soon a Haitian Creole language and, of course, African language eventually, because we have to communicate with one another. The bottom line is that we are African people. And in fact, the most revolutionary thing that we can do at this very moment is declare that we are an African people, that I am an African, and we are an African. The most revolutionary thing that we can do, imagine Africans on the planet, not that they're Nigerian, not that they're Ghanaian or Kenyan or Namibian. No, we are African. We are African. Africans in a diaspora. Not that I am a Cuban or Jamaican or Haitian or American or Colombian or Brazilian, but we are African. We are an African people. And if that mindset could be developed and we come together and to share that with all of the talents that we have, that's why I'm saying we have all we need.
Yep.
All we need to do is to release the vice grip that the European, the Caucasian, has on our minds. And if you understand that tool, once the vice grip has been set, and they are the ones who set it, you can't just pull it apart. There's a knob at the end of the handle of the vice grip. That knob is symbolic of consciousness. The more conscious we become, the better we're able to turn that knob until we have a deep understanding of who we are culturally, historically. Now you can release the vice grip and you can see the Caucasian, the cracker, the European for who and what they are. Not that we challenge them, because there's nothing we could do about them, that we challenge ourselves. We challenge each other to be the best that we can be and to share with one another, to learn to respect one another, trust one another, work with one another, to do for ourselves. That's where we must go with this situation. To me, that is the only salvation. Otherwise, we will continue to be diminished, because if you look at the situation globally, They are killing us. Yes, we are killing ourselves, but we've been trained by them to kill ourselves, because anytime you train a person to hate themselves, to hate their hair, to hate their nose, to hate their skin, and so when you look at somebody who looks like you, you hate them, and you want to kill them. So we are at a very tough time. We only have about 5 minutes left in the program. I appreciate
I'm just going to say this.
Sure.
I can't wait for 2036 Sylvan Road. I will be there at your beckoning. And thank you so much. Blessings to you and good health. And thank you for allowing me to participate. I will say adieu.
Ashe, my sister. Peace to you. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
And, you know, I tell you, let me see if Jay is still online. Brother Jay, are you still there?
Yeah, Brother OT, I'm still here, man. I was just enjoying the show. I was out and I just came back in. Listen, right quick, man, in regards to what you said about us and reparations, I couldn't agree with you more, brother, because, you know, that Yerugal Jew, Charles Krauthammer, you know, he's like Pat Buchanan. Every now and then, them crackers will tell you what they really, really feel, what they think, and what they would like for us to do to get out of their hair. And like you said, when he makes the analogy that we would give him the money right back, he's not lying. Because that's exactly what would happen if we were given reparations for the majority of our race. I mean, men like me and you would probably collectively come together and get the hell out of here or put ourselves in the position to be able to go back and forward. But the reality is that on the whole, I would say 95% of our people would just give it right back to the cracker. Yeah. And the perfect example of that is we have no community.
Jay, let me say this to you. And I hate to say this to you, you're right. That percentage you gave at 95% of our people, particularly here in this country, you're right. Because if you look at people who think and act and present themselves the way that we do, we're a small group. We're a fringe group. The conscious community in this country of those of us who think independently, for those of us who think about sovereignty, for those of us who understand this European, this Yerugu, this cracker, and what he has done to us, is a small amount of us. Because many of us, even those who are so-called conscious, we're really just trying to find a comfortable corner, a comfortable niche.
In the Yerugu situation.
Exactly.
Now, listen, I know you got to get off, but listen, if you get a chance, I don't know if you have BET, but I want you tonight, and I want the listening audience out there to listen at this real dangerous Negro peen, Angela Rye, and what she's going to present with Maxine Waters tonight on BET. And Oshie, if you don't look at it, DVR it and look at it, man.
Okay.
Because it's a class example, like that Roland Martin, to where they're trying to take us into this burning house with this Yerugal.
That's right.
And the games that they're playing with us. You know what I mean? And we really got to start studying them and put ourselves in a position like you're doing to counterbalance this madness, because they're dangerous, bro.
Very.
So listen, I know you got to go, but please, Oshie, if you can,
look
at that and pass the word out. Hotep, brother. Peace
Hotep.
And love.
Peace. We end this program like we end all of our programs here on African Perspectives, on the Motherland Media Network, on TimeForAnAwakening.com, and Black Talk Radio Network.com. The words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed day. Hope you'll be with us on Friday. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you.